south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, just a little housekeeping here. I'm going to be traveling a lot in the next month, in and out of the jungles. So dropping these Expat Files shows twice a week is going to be a little tough. So expect during the next month, the shows will be spotty, meaning there'll be some old ones run here and there, and some current ones too. Though I hope to get at least one a week in the can, as opposed to the normal two. We'll see, just a heads up to let you know. Oh, you want to hear something funny that happened to me? About a week ago, I was a keynote speaker, the first speaker on the roster for a Plan B retirement and investment conference. And after I did my hour, a lady came up to me and said, "Can I ask you something?" I said, "Sure, go ahead." She said, "Did you know you have your shirt on inside out?" Then she seemed a little embarrassed and said, "Or did you plan it that way?" "It is a good attention grabber," she said. Then she said, "For all I know, the way things change, it could be the latest fashion." And sure enough, I looked at my shirt and the seams were on the outside. Nice first impression, huh? And naturally, I thought to myself, what an idiot. Though, speaking of crazy fashions, at least I wasn't sporting blue hair or wearing ass-crack pants. That would have been an attention grabber too, huh? So naturally, after we had that little conversation, I went into the bathroom and reversed my shirt. Speaking of clothes and fashion, have you heard the latest edict from North Korea's fat boy, Kim Jong-un? What a fashion plate he is, huh? Turns out, according to Radio Free Asia, North Korea has ramped up its crackdown on capitalist fashion. Anyone caught wearing certain Western fashion trends must confess their crime and change into more acceptable clothing immediately. Unacceptable clothing, including tight jeans, dyed hair, and you guessed it, ass-crack pants. Probably because if Kim wore them, the whole world would split a gut. Anyway, according to the reports, North Korea has youth league patrols. Ass-crack pant patrols by any other name. Yep, they're checking for kid and adolescent deviants. Cracking down on people, no pun intended, with dyed hair, Western clothes, and, get this, t-shirts and sweatshirts with foreign lettering on them. Most specifically, lettering in English. That includes women who wear short skirts, tight workout clothes, and yoga pants. That's a shame. Ask any guy and he'll tell you yoga pants will go down in history as one of the great 21st century inventions. So what happens if you're caught? It says, well, if caught, you must wait on the side of the road until patrols have finished combing the area. They haul you off to the Youth League office where you must confess your Western fashion crimes in writing. Then it says you'll only be released if a friend or family member brings acceptably modest clothes for you to change into. If not, they'll put you in a holding pen and make you listen to reggaeton music until you go insane. Nah, not really. I just made that part up. But it would work. It would make you crazy. Anyway, then it says for a second offense, the violator's name, home address, and workplace will be revealed publicly on what's called the third broadcast, referring to a state-controlled radio station and public loudspeaker system that spreads propaganda around the country daily. Then, the article says, the fashion police will also report those crimes to the person's employer. Then it says the North Korean Youth League Fashion Police has recently scaled up its efforts on the crackdown, and last month, members of the organization held a nationwide educational session defining the act of imitating foreign fashion and hairstyles as a dangerous poison for our youth. They call it decadent capitalist influence. The question is, where are all those North Korean kids buying all that stuff? How are they getting their hands on it? There's no internet shopping or Amazon. Where do you think? It's all made next door in Mother China. Think of those logistics. Oh, and get this. Rumor has it, and this is only an unconfirmed rumor now. Multiple crimes, such as wearing ass-crack pants and listening to reggaeton music at the same time, will merit waterboarding. Yep, it's true. Every cloud has a silver lining. By the way, speaking of ass-crack pants here in Latin America, you know, the good news is that disgustingly vomitous fashion trend seems to have peaked around 6 months ago. I'm seeing it less and less these days. Thank God. In fact, just the other day, I was standing in front of a nice first-world Hyatt hotel, and three guys walked up, all blinged out, gigantic fake chains and all that. They could have been hotel guests, I don't know. Or maybe Roto-Rooter guys or dumpster technicians. I don't know, but the rent-a-cop at the front door, you know, there's always a guy standing there looking at people coming in and out. He told the guy with the ass-crack pants to pull him up. An embarrassing moment for the guy, because I'm sure he spent quite a bit of time earlier that morning picking out the right flaming red underwear. You know the saying, you only get one chance to make a first impression. All right, let's take an email. This one's from Mitchell. He says, hey, Johnny, I listened to your show about electric bikes, and I thought I'd add my 2 cents. I'm here in Beijing, one of the most populated cities in the world, living with e-bikes buzzing around me everywhere. And it's been going on like that for 5 years. Everything you said about them is absolutely true. These things are a must in a city that was plagued with so much smog. There are, however, 2 downsides to them, as I see it. First of all, they're silent, and that's a bad thing. Unlike cars, these things are crawling all over the pedestrian walkways, too, sidewalks, etc. No big deal for me so far. I haven't been hurt yet. But I always have to keep a sharp lookout or get trampled. Second problem is those contraptions keep getting faster and faster all the time. This doesn't bode well for Beijing. At least half of the e-bikes on the road are for delivery services, too. The Chinese version of Uber Eats. I recently found out the delivery guys have a money incentive to get there as quickly as possible and get onto the next customer. So naturally, they're going to whip around as fast as they can. A food delivery e-bike hitting a child at 30 miles an hour is going to do some damage for sure. Oh, and just another thing. I'm hearing more and more comments about how there's a big market for stolen e-bike batteries. Anyway, Johnny, I thought I'd give you my view on e-bikes from here in Beijing, where they're everywhere. Since eventually those things will be coming to Latin America in a big way. I can only imagine how much worse the accident situation is going to be south of the border when those e-bikes take over. And he signs it, all the best, Mitchell B. All right, thanks for that, Mitch. Yep, you're right. It's going to be more crazy times when those e-bikes start taking over. But still, I'll take a country loaded with rotten e-bike drivers over gas-powered junk heap motorcycles any day. There'll always be rotten drivers, but combining the both rotten drivers and rotten bikes? That's a big problem. And that's something we haven't mentioned, you know. At least when those e-bikes start coming in, they're all brand new. It's new technology, so they're all going to be up to current first world safety standards. In other words, all the lights will be working. Unlike the current millions of road cucarachas that are real hazards because most of them don't have a complete set of working lights. Even though a replacement bulb is $1 or less, they just don't care. All right, now an email from Brad. He says, Johnny, I'm going to Mexico this August mainly because it's the season for chiles in Nogado. I'm a former chef, and I love Mexican food. Colombian food sucks, ditto Panama. By the way, Johnny, you never seem to talk about food or cuisine. I hope you do. I'll be listening. Signed, Bradley. Well, Brad, it's not that I don't talk about food. I occasionally talk about food in relation to our good old friend Montezuma and his revenge. But really, I appreciate you mentioning the subject since you are a former chef. In fact, you know, when us gringos have get-togethers, once in a while the subject comes up. What would you do if you won the lottery? It's a good question to ask. You get interesting answers. Though for most people, it's pretty predictable. They'd buy a house or houses for their parents or kids. Cars, boats, jacuzzis, and pools are the usual suspects. As for me, I have a different take on it. My answer is, number one, I'd always fly first class. Not to be elegant or a show-off or to put on the dog, but because you got so much extra space. How many times have your legs got cramped or have fallen asleep on a long flight? Or you've been jammed between 2 supersized humans? Yep, first class travel every time. That's what I'd do if I won the lottery. And number two, this you'll like, Brad. I would hire a personal chef. No, not a live-in chef, but a certified, well-schooled chef, an educated, skilled, nutrition-minded chef. I'd have him get up before dawn and go to the markets and pick out the freshest, most natural stuff. Then pop in at the house, cook breakfast, make lunch and dinner, stick it in the refrigerator, and be gone by, let's say, 10 or 11 in the morning. Then I'd be all set up with great and healthy meals all day. Why? Because to tell you the truth, I hate cooking. So that would be my idea of extravagant living if I won the lottery. How about you? What would be on your lottery wish list? Would you buy 5 Cadillacs and give them to your friends and family like Elvis? Sure hope not. By the way, a long time ago, a friend of mine won the Canadian lottery. Over $1 million US. He's not such a good friend anymore since he ripped me off. I told that story a long time ago, probably 8 or 9 years ago now. I met him down in Costa Rica, and I knew him for 2.5 years before I ever found out he won the lottery. He just didn't tell anybody. Why? Well, he had good reason. Up in Canada, when all his friends and family found out he had money, they all nicked him. He lent money to friends and family left and right. He said even people from junior high and high school who he hadn't seen in 10 or 15 years would stop him in the grocery store and ask him for a loan. He came from a rather small town of around 50 or 60,000 people and said everyone and his brother had a hard luck sob story for him. And he, being a nice guy, was an easy touch. Then he opened a restaurant up in Canada, and I think it was Edmonton, but he knew nothing about restaurants, though it was his dream to always have one. It failed. Another 300 grand in the crapper. So he said within 3 years he was down to a quarter of what he'd won. That's when he and his wife decided to get the hell out of Canada. They moved to Costa Rica, where no one knew him or that they'd ever won the lottery. The only person they told was their lawyer, who happened to be my lawyer. That's how I found out. Not on purpose either. He let it slip accidentally. But I digress. As usual, man, did I digress. By the way, I've been getting a lot of emails from people who want to check out that stem cell clinic in the DR. You know, the one I took my brother to. He's the stem cell poster child. Anyway, as mentioned previously, there's an English-speaking concierge lady that will be able to set things up for you starting July 1st. So just hang in there. What's that, in a month and a half maybe? Now, for those of you who speak pretty good Spanish, you might not need her at all. But just remember, you'll need hotel accommodations close to the place, right? Because you'll have to go back and forth there every day for the length of your treatment, which could be from 3 days to 2 weeks, depending how up you are. And if you need to be detoxed from the terrible American diet everyone seems to be addicted to. And all those prescription meds everyone's loaded up on. Oh, and remember, if you don't speak Spanish, there could be some difficulty communicating with the docs. That's why for Spanish dunces, yep, Spanish dunces. Are you one of those? Don't laugh. I was one of those once for the first 5 years I was down here. There's an English-speaking concierge lady. Anyway, I've been getting a lot of emails on that and people are asking for updates, so there it is. We'll keep you posted as we get closer to July 1st. All right, let's talk about something that gringos and expats are very concerned about. Gringo prices. Let me start out this segment by giving a sound piece of advice. Your cost of living here in Latin America will decrease dramatically the more and more Spanish you know. And if you speak Spanish pretty good, the locals will be much less inclined to throw those gringo prices at you. They know an astute gringo when they see one, that you've been around the block. At that point, they know that you know what the locals pay and what kind of deals they get. All right, so gringo pricing, also known as the gringo gouge or the gringo tax, is a hot topic in virtually all Latin American expat communities. And especially now since inflation is kicking in. Sometimes, these days, it's difficult to know if it's the gringo gouge being thrown at you or just inflation. Anyway, the gringo gouge is a time-honored tradition. It's a game, almost a national sport, especially on the gringo tourist trail. That's where the locals could see a tourist or gringo coming a mile away. It's as if you got a big holographic dollar sign on your forehead. You see, local Latinos who make their living on or near the tourist trail have had lots of practice gouging gringos. They know exactly how far they can push you, and when you push back or just walk away, they'll always end up coming down. Oh, and if you're one of those smarty pants gringos who thinks it won't happen to you, you're thinking, you're way too smart. You're a great haggler, right? You've had a few rummage sales. You've been on eBay. You know how to get to the bottom line. Well, guess what? If you've ever been on vacation in Latin America, it's happened to you already. You've been gouged probably multiple times and didn't even know it. Some of the most common places to get gouged are small shops and stores where the prices aren't marked and the proprietor has an opportunity to size you up. You will find, however, that you won't or can't be gouged in chain supermarkets or department stores where prices are marked on everything. Where there's a sticker price or a barcode, you won't get gouged. Everyone pays the same. Obviously, the same thing goes for transnational fast food joints like McDonald's or Taco Bell or Kentucky Fried. Now, one of the places gringo pricing is oh so common is at those big fruit and vegetable markets, the mercados. Most things aren't marked. There's no stickers. Another curious manifestation of gringo pricing is the way prices seem to fluctuate automatically, always higher, when they're quoted a second time. In other words, you walk into a shop and you get quoted a price, you come back a couple days later, say you want to buy a modem or a computer. No, not a moto, the Latin slang for motorcycle. I'm talking about a modem. All of a sudden, it's $35 when a couple of days ago, it was only $25. That's happened to me a couple times too. You see that once in a while in car repair and mechanic shops. Now, a sort of small-time but very prevalent example of this is with shoeshine boys. For example, if you're in Guatemala, you'll see them everywhere. Big cities, small cities, even way out in one-horse towns in the boonies. And depending where you see those guys and whether you're a gringo or not, the prices will fluctuate by hundreds of percentage points. Now, when you're on or near the gringo tourist trail, the shoeshine boys will come up to you and say, shine. And when you're way off the trail, they'll say, lustre. And believe me, the price will be much different whether the guy says lustre or shine. Why? Well, as you might imagine, gringos respond to the word shine and locals to lustre. You get it, right? Now, about those shoeshine boys. Oh, and they're not all boys either. Lots of them are grown men, but never have I seen a lady shoeshine girl. Though I have to say, it would be good marketing, quite a novelty to have shoeshine girls. I guess no one's thought of it yet, or maybe it's a closed clique and the shoeshine boys would bully the girls, or they wouldn't let them in the unofficial shoeshine union. Anyway, you'll see them everywhere. Little guys carrying around tiny wooden boxes, and they'll pull up next to you and say, shine? Or when off the tourist trail, lustre. That's lustre. It's got the root word luster in it. Hey, everyone wants their shoes looking lustrous, right? Except, you know, some shoes can't be shined, like flip-flops, Jesus sandals, or tennis shoes. But those guys will still come up to you and ask you if you want to shine. Funny thing, too, guys getting the shine, that'd be gringos and Latinos. That's an almost 100% male thing, too. We're talking about guys on the receiving end of a shine. You never see gringas or Latinas getting a shoe shine. Though I'm sure there are exceptions. I've never seen one. It's odd, you know. Ladies wear walking shoes, too, right? So why not an occasional shine? I don't get it, but there's a lot of things I don't get. For example, in Antigua, Guatemala, which is considered on the tourist trail in Guatemala, but it's not high tourist trail like Cancun or anything like that at all. But it's a place where lots of gringos, tourists, and Europeans hang out because it's an international UNESCO World Heritage Site. That means lots and lots of backpackers and tree-hugging gringos in their upscale L.L. Bean and Banana Republic outback hiking duds. Now, if you're in Antigua, Guatemala, and you're in the Central Park and you sit down on a bench, within 30 seconds, there'll be two or three or four shoeshine boys jockeying for position. Some of them pint-sized, even under 10 years old. Funny thing is, as far as gringo tourists who are just down for maybe a week or two, they'll get a shoe shine whether they need it or not because it looks so cute. A little 8-year-old kid shining your shoes. It's a great photo op for a tourist. Now, the thing is, this might sound petty, but you should ask the kid how much before you have him shine your shoes because some of them will say $3, even $5 when the going rate for a local is 50 cents. If you're new in town, how are you going to know? You see, the shine boys who hang around tourist areas are jaded. They don't even want to shine the shoes of the locals. They want the gringos and Europeans because they'll pay $3 to $5. Now, as for me, when I'm in the Central Park and a kid comes up and asks for a shine and says, let's say $3, I say, in the city, in Guatemala City, which is way off the gringo tourist trail, I tell them I get the same shine for 50 cents. And guess what? They'll hem and haw, but they'll do it for 50 cents. Then after they're done, I'll usually give them a buck. By the way, you can tell there's a big difference between shoeshine boys on and off the gringo tourist trail. You can usually tell by looking at them. The shine boys on the tourist trail, they look healthier, cleaner, and a little better nourished than the shine boys in the big cities off the gringo trail. And why not? They make 200, 300, even 500% more. The truth is, of course, you can pay them just what they're asking. But, you know, it's a symptom of what happened in Costa Rica, Cancun, and all the other places on the gringo tourist trail where gringos and expats have unwittingly jacked up prices. And as unfair as this sounds to locals, it does distort the economy. Meanwhile, you got everyone who goes to Costa Rica and Cancun saying, man, is that place expensive? It's like New York or Chicago. Well, how do you think that happened? The locals didn't do that. The gringos did. Now, there's one place I personally really experienced the gringo gouge. At the vet. Yeah, I've always had dogs, so I do stop in at the vet. Now, here's what I've noticed. In Latin America, there are three kinds of vets. The ones that are located in upscale shopping malls, they usually have a very nice van or two painted with happy dogs and cats on it. Just know if that's your vet, it's going to be gringo prices all the way. You walk in one of those places, you'll see upscale Latinos and gringos in that waiting room. And they'll stock all kinds of imported dog and cat toys and paraphernalia there too, along with a variety of expensive and trendy imported dog and cat food. And some of those guys have a green, healthy, non-GMO dog and cat food section too. So hold on to your wallet. You'll be paying through the nose for that stuff. Remember, it's all imported. Next, you've got the more down-to-earth vet number two. He's got his office in a normal residential area or barrio. Oftentimes, the office could be a little scruffy. They don't have a personalized, artistically rendered doggy van, maybe an old beat-up station wagon to haul their fuzzy clients around, and in their waiting room, middle-class Latino customers. Almost no gringos at all. Or upscale Latinos, for that matter. And their prices reflect that. Then you've got your horse and farm animal doctors. They're usually located inside one of those big buildings called an aguapecario, a place where you buy feed for farm animals and medicines. And those are the least expensive vets of all, but man, do they know their stuff. Now, the gringo gouge or gringo prices applies to both vets and some pharmacies, too. Here's a story I just heard about. Happened in Ecuador. A veterinarian prescribed an antifungal medicine for an expat's pet schnauzer. While at the pharmacy, farmacia, she was quoted $292 for 120 tablets. She was shocked and reported back to the vet and told him the price. He told her many pharmacies give gringos the highest price medicines available. They don't even tell them about the generics. So the vet accompanied the dog owner to another farmacia where they bought the same 120 pills, generic now, for $20. Imagine that. The first pharmacist wanted to nail that gringa for a 1,500% markup. Sad thing is, she was shocked at the first pharmacist's bill, but would have paid it without knowing the facts. Because she's a gringa, the pharmacist knew it and knew she had the money. A pharmacist would never try that stuff on a local. Wouldn't do him any good anyway. There isn't a local around who's got $300 to drop on his dog. That's a month's salary for the average Latin American. The question is, how are you supposed to feel when you know you've been gouged? You might realize it at the moment, or a couple of days or even weeks later when you compare prices with other gringos and locals. Of course, you've been ripped off, but do you feel pissed off? Do you want revenge? Do you want to go back there and confront the guy? It's hardly worth it. After all, no one's forcing you to make those kind of deals. Where the price seems outrageous or not, you agreed. So then what are the locals who gouge you thinking in the moment? Well, there's lots of controversy and opinions about that. Some people say it's explained by xenophobia. Locals that believe the ugly American stories they hear from friends and relatives, or maybe they were personally treated rudely by some gringo or expat in the past. That could easily be the case while on the gringo tourist trail in cities like Cuenca or Costa Rica, Cancun, where the gringo expat populations exploded over the past decade or so, and gringos disrespect the local culture sometimes, or are perceived to be crowding out the locals and increasing the prices and cost of living for them. So then they might be thinking, why not disrespect the gringos in return? Though sometimes a gringo will get gouged simply because there's an opportunity to do so. For example, you go into a local hardware store and you're looking for a certain kind of water pump and there's only one there. He's got you, right? There's no alternative. The seller sees a chance to make a few extra bucks and he takes it. You know, the more you embed yourself on the gringo tourist trail, the more the locals are susceptible to jealousy and envy. You know, there are lots of Latinos that have made it to the United States and are doing pretty well. Then, 5, 10, or 20 years later, when they've established themselves, they'll make that trip back down to Costa Rica, Guatemala, Ecuador, whatever, bragging to the folks in the home country, who are still pretty poor by comparison. There's a lot of that going down. Latinos coming back for a visit, putting on the dog, showing off their bling and their Nikes. How do you think the much poorer locals feel about that? No one likes a show-off braggart or a wise guy, especially if it's a family member. Though I have to say it's a particular conundrum for gringos and expats when they get taken advantage of, especially long-term gringos and expats who you see living in the area. These are good, steady, repeat customers. But somehow, certain local Latinos don't see it that way. They want to make a buck now, today, even if it means forfeiting 100 times that in potential dollars in the future. That's a discussion gringos and expats have all the time. Why is the guy trying to gouge me? Doesn't he know if he treats me fair, he'll be cultivating a good client for life? It doesn't make sense. Especially on the gringo tourist trail, locals will try to take advantage of a customer who could be a good steady client and refer others. You see that all the time with these appliance repair guys. Let's say, for example, getting a guy over to do maintenance on your air conditioner. First thing he wants to know is, where do you live? That way he can qualify if you're living in a wealthy high-end zone or in the barrio. If you're in a high-end area, he'll charge you $40. In a barrio, $20. That's not always the case, of course, but you know, those mechanics and repair guys, they talk to each other and they know what the traffic will bear. It can also make a big difference if you have a local Latino who's a friend of yours, let's say, do the call. Then, even if you are in a known expensive high-end area, your Latino or Latina buddy can negotiate. And you, with your bad Spanish, even if it's good, you still won't be nearly as successful as the local guy trying to make the deal. There's another thing that needs mentioning. Latinos are very superstitious and religious, though it may not seem like it, the way they, especially the macho guys, screw around on their partners. So what does that have to do with the price of tacos, Johnny? Well, it does, because being very superstitious and religious has its effect. For example, suppose a local Latino is in a taxi and finds a wallet on the floor. On further investigation, he discovers it has 500 bucks in it. He can either turn the wallet in with all its contents to the owner, since it contains an ID, or he can take the money and give the wallet to the driver and say, look, I just found this in the back seat. Well, chances are he'll choose the second option. Why? Because he'll be telling himself, God has been very good to me today. And he'll really believe that. He'll also feel righteous because the wallet, IDs, credit cards, that important stuff, will get back to the owner. And when he recognizes from looking at the idea that the owner was a gringo, he'll feel even less inclined to give back to dough because gringos are all rich. They figure gringos never run out of money. By the way, a local Latino street vendor, businessman, whatever, who routinely gouges gringos will also try to suck a little extra dough out of local Latinos as well, when he can. And word will get around with the locals and he'll get on their suspect list. Of course, when a local Latino engages in gouging another Latino, it'll often be just for a few percentage points, nickels and dimes. Of course, there are always cases when gringos don't mind paying extra. They figure it's charity, generosity, karma. They figure they themselves have had all the breaks in the world. Why not help the poor locals out? Though more often than not, when gringos and expats first come down to Latin America and realize they've been gouged here and there, it's generally pure ignorance. They simply don't know any better. Hopefully it's for just small amounts, a little bit here and there. Then you do what most of us do. You get smarter and chalk it up to experience. By the way, some gringos, when they get gouged, chalk it up to the pain in the ass factor. They accept it, sort of begrudgingly. If you put yourself in the local seller's shoes, you can see why. Gringos figure sometimes it's the extra cost due to the frustration of doing business with people who don't know a lick of Spanish. Oh, and remember, when you get gouged, try not to complain too much. The solution is to learn more Spanish. Remember, the more Spanish you learn, the lower your cost of living. South of the border, you've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos. He knows Spanish.